Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, significant new measures to deal with the immigration crisis will be considered by the government today, including plans to fast-track people who arrive in Ireland without identity papers, and also to move away from the use of hotels for housing refugees. And separately, Eamon Ryan will bring forward plans to reduce car use in cities, including higher parking fees, congestion charges, new penalties for higher polluting vehicles. So there is a lot going on. Daniel Murray is political correspondent with the Business Post and is with us now to talk us through it all. Good morning, Daniel.
Morning, Claire.
So the Cabinet is going to sign up to this EU Migration and Asylum Pact, and that, among other things, will see people who arrive in Ireland without a passport being fast-tracked and potentially sent back to where they came from within months. So will you explain to us how it's going to work and how it's different from what Ireland currently does?
Yeah, of course. So this has really been in gestation at a European level for about 10 years since the 2014 migration crisis. And finally, legislators at an EU level decided over Christmas to approve this new suite of legislative measures. And what Helen McEntee, the Justice Minister, is doing today is kind of bringing a proposal to opt into those European Union asylum reforms. And as you mentioned there, there's a range of different things that will be implemented over time. It'll oblige states to conduct enhanced kind of screening and security checks on those arriving seeking asylum in Europe, including in Ireland. There'll be mandatory processing time, so it'll have to be put into legislation that, you know, fast-track procedures will have to be done in 12 weeks and that ordinary processing times will have to be done within about 6 months. As I said there will also be kind of fast-track procedures for certain categories. So you mentioned there that people who arrive without documents, which there's been quite a large number of people arriving without documents or with false documents, or people who come from so-called safe countries, which we can talk about in a second. And then finally, that there'll be new solidarity provisions to ensure that European member states that are under particular pressure during a migration surge, and this is often the likes of Italy or Greece, some of those kind of border states, that they'll be able to appeal to other member states for help. And that help will come in the form of countries like Ireland having to either take in additional immigrants from those countries and process them here, or contribute kind of financial resources to the countries that are under pressure. So a suite of new measures, and definitely represents the biggest overhaul of migration rules in the EU for decades.
OK, well, let's talk about those who will be subject to more intensive procedures when they arrive in Ireland. People arriving from safe countries, and we know we have this list of safe countries. So what is the plan for those people?
So people from safe countries, there is a list. It's at the discretion of each EU country to kind of draw up their list. And those countries in Ireland, it's the Minister for Justice that draws up that list. And it's basically countries whereby on a kind of a default basis, it's assumed that it's not a country where there's war. It's not a country where there's a large amount of persecution, although there has been some pushback on that from some NGOs. So the presumption is that by default, these countries are safe. And there are also countries where we happen to have a large number of international protection applicants arriving from. So under these new measures, it'll be mandatory to process people arriving from safe countries in a matter of 12 weeks. Now, Ireland has actually been doing this on a voluntary basis for the last year or so. It was a new measure that was brought in by Justice Minister Helen McEntee, but this will become mandatory under this new European legislation. Of course, that won't only apply to people coming from safe countries, but other categories of international protection applicants as well, including those who arrive without documents or with false documents.
People who are sent home, who are given a deportation order, the state often relies on those people to leave themselves, to opt to leave. And there was recent controversy about this because there didn't seem to be verifiable figures to show how many people who were given deportation orders had actually left the country. Is there anything in these plans around that?
There is. The intention is for Minister McEntee to bring forward plans to make it more efficient in terms of the deportation process. So at the moment, people are required for the most part to self-deport. And while the department says that it believes most of those people actually do self-deport, it says it's impossible to fully verify those numbers. So under these new provisions, there will probably be enhanced procedures for actually deporting people, the state deporting people, which to date has been, you know, kind of chartered flights, those kinds of things. So certainly that'll be an element of these plans.
Now, we have the Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, bringing this long-awaited plan to overhaul our own immigration accommodation system. But what we're looking at here, and you'll explain to us what is on the table, but it's not going to happen today or tomorrow or even in months' time, because he's already made it very clear that the current system that's in place will be there until this new one is up and running, and who knows how long that's going to take.
Yes, definitely. And look, the government had long promised to implement a white paper about kind of unwinding the direct provision system, which is the main accommodation system for international protection applicants currently. That was knocked back by the very large surge in immigration that we had over the last 2 years, not only from Ukraine, but actually from quite a number of other countries as well. What Roderick O'Gorman is bringing to Cabinet today is a kind of an attempt to implement that plan in the medium to long term, to move away from that direct provision system, which is relying on contracted private accommodation, and to move towards a state accommodation system, you know, the acquirement of buildings and of state reception centres where people can be processed before their applications are decided on. What they have said is that they will have to keep relying on private operators in the medium to long term, even though the ambition is to move towards a purely state accommodation. But of course, at the moment, we're relying entirely almost entirely on private accommodation. So it is still a significant policy change.
So how much information are we going to get on the location, for example, of these centres today? Are we going to get that sort of detail?
I don't think we are going to get the identity of the centres today. I think that's something that's going to come in the longer term. There have already been some centres that have been indicated for the processing of Ukrainian asylum seekers. So they may be mentioned again. And of course, in time, if the Ukrainian refugee crisis subsides, then those centres might even be able to be transitioned into the international protection system. But this really is going to be a longer term plan about how to move away from the heavy reliance, not only on direct provision, but on hotels and the tourism sector over the last 2 years.
But as we said at the beginning, that's not going to happen today or tomorrow. But is the minister going to take into account local factors like that, like the fact that a hotel might be the last one available for tourists in a town before accepting an offer of accommodation from a private provider?
Where the continued need for private contracted accommodation is required, the government is now saying that it is going to have to be only done on the basis of what is kind of suitable, both in terms of the local economy and community. And certainly the types of things that we have seen where the last hotel in the town is used for or is proposed to be used for international protection applicants, that is something that they will be trying to move away from and to really treat it on a case-by-case basis.
OK, so now let's look at other issues at Cabinet today. Eamon Ryan wants to reduce traffic in our cities as Minister for Transport. So he's bringing this suite of measures to Cabinet, but ultimately it's going to be up to the local authorities to implement these. And there are a lot of very interesting features of what's being proposed. Can you take us through them, Daniel?
Yeah, so this is what's called a demand management strategy, and it is about trying to reduce traffic congestion, trying to clean up air quality, and of course trying to meet our transport climate targets, which are extremely steep and difficult to meet. So all of those things are about trying to reduce private car use, incentivize people to get out of their private cars by improving public transport and those kind of facilities, but then also putting in place, you know, more punitive measures or the options to take more punitive measures by local authorities. And those could be things like higher parking fees, the removal of on-street parking, congestion charges in towns. So kind of controversial enough measures, but ones that are not being demanded on high by the government, but will be laid out as a list of options for local authorities to implement over time. And local authorities will be encouraged to take an approach that to only implement these measures if the public transport infrastructure in their locality is sufficient, and that these won't just end up being punitive measures for motorists, but will actually encourage behavioural change and get people to shift from one form of transport to another, because that is the entire point of the strategy.
So Daniel, how will it work then? So Cabinet will approve these measures, almost like presenting a selection box to the local authorities, who will then be able to decide what's going to fly here, what do we need to use in this local area?
Yes, exactly. So this is a high-level strategy where a number of these options will be outlined. There will also be enabling legislation to allow for local authorities to be able to bring in things like congestion charges if they want, or what are called clean air zones, where more polluting vehicles aren't allowed into certain parts of towns. And it'll be up to local authorities then to take those decisions. And while some people might say that, you know, some local authorities may never take some of these decisions, they are all also tasked with developing their own climate action plans, local climate action plans, and that flows from the National Climate Action Plan. And within those plans, there have to be plans to reduce emissions in transport. So it is likely that as a part of local authority climate action plans, these kind of options will make up the suite of measures that will be put in place.
Really interesting measures in there, including one I was reading about this morning, that if you are a car pooler or if you don't drive that much, that you might be paying less in insurance charges. So I'd imagine the insurance companies would need or want to have some input into that.
Yeah, absolutely. They certainly would want to have input into that. And I think the idea today with this strategy is that it'll kind of kickstart. Well, first of all, it'll go to consultation for a number of weeks, and then it'll kickstart engagement across a range of areas to actually implement a number of these measures. Of course, it's not only looking at some of those, you know, more punitive measures to try and encourage people out of cars, but it's recognising that the whole transport sector is in a process of transformation. And of particular importance to that is the tax system, because currently the state takes in about 5 billion from excise and VAT on petrol and diesel. And if the car fleet is to be electrified, then we lose that from the public finances. So this strategy also recognises that a new tax system for transport has to be developed fairly urgently in the next couple of years. Otherwise, there's a huge hole in the public finances if we manage to electrify the car fleet, as is the ambition.
Okay, and given that this is going to Cabinet today, I assume there's political agreement on this, because people might remember a few years ago when these measures were first mooted by Eamon Ryan, there were ructions within both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on these measures. Can we take it that this is all agreed?
Yes, well, the politics of this were certainly handled very sensitively and carefully, exactly because it caused such ructions last year when it was first announced. So I understand all the party leaders are aware of it. It has been circulated. And look, the fact that it isn't a policy decision, it is more enabling legislation and guidelines, mostly for local authorities and high-level strategy, that has taken some of the sting out of it means that TDs going to local and European elections won't have to stand indoors and say that these things are definitely being implemented in their locality here and now. So I think the politics should be eased slightly a bit thanks to that.
Daniel, thank you very much. And if we get any news emerging from the Cabinet meeting this morning, we'll be sure to bring it to you. Daniel Murray from the Business Post there. Now, coming up next, no doubt you will have heard of that dreadful tragedy on the roads in Mayo. We'll be going there after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.